From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. I'm Neil McCready. Today on the show, I taped about an hour with Andy Staples of The Athletic, lead college football writer there at The Athletic. So we talk a lot of college football, a lot of Ole Miss, a lot of what's happening this morning with the Miami Marlins. They're still stuck in Philadelphia after a COVID outbreak of sorts. The numbers seem to be going in the right direction at this point, but still as many as nine, I think, of the active major league players on that team have tested positive. A couple of members of the coaching staff. So I think it's 11 of the 33 people in their traveling party, as it pertains to players, that have tested positive for COVID. The Marlins' home opener tonight against Baltimore has been postponed, not canceled, postponed. The Yankees are due in Philadelphia. They were supposed to open a series tonight at Citizens Bank Park. That game has been postponed, I would presume, to make sure that the Phillies don't have an outbreak. I would assume that the Phillies are being tested today. Also, the Yankees, obviously, and the Phillies want to get that clubhouse where the Marlins were staying cleaned completely before the Yankees come in. So that game tonight has been postponed, not canceled. As of this moment, it appears that everybody else in Major League Baseball is playing tonight, with the games that were scheduled. I know there was another rumor that the Cincinnati Reds had some issues, COVID-related issues. They lost a game on Sunday to the Detroit Tigers there at Great America Ballpark, but several of the Reds players were not available because they had some symptoms that don't necessarily mean they have COVID, but had some symptoms, and so the Reds were being cautious. It's my understanding the Cubs did not fly to Cincinnati yesterday. The Cubs were planning to fly to Cincinnati this morning. I've done that flight. It's less than an hour in the air. It's very quick, so that's not the end of the world. So that's another game to keep an eye on. The Cubs and Reds are scheduled as of this recording to play at 5:40 Central Time there in Cincinnati. So we'll watch that as well, because it's not, I know we're not a baseball show, but if you can't extrapolate what this might mean for a college football season, you're not following along very closely. This is big. People all over college football. My phone blown up this morning with college football people expressing concern, really hopeful that that this is okay. There were people that were really getting optimistic as the Major League Baseball season began on Thursday. They completed a full weekend. It certainly appeared before this morning that everything had gone pretty smoothly. And there was a lot of optimism that, hey, that's a good sign, right? That's a good sign, because the NFL training camps are due to open tomorrow, I believe. Most every team opens camp or is scheduled to open camp this week. As Andy will say in the interview that you're about to hear in a few minutes, there were college football games scheduled as of the weekend for August the 29th, which means those teams involved could technically start their fall camp on Friday, or Saturday, I should say, August the 1st. We're in the last week of July. It's a big week. Greg Sankey has intimated in the past few weeks that he had expected making some sort of a decision about an SEC season by the end of July, and the end of July is Friday, so we're there. We're running out of time to make decisions, and all eyes in the sports world right now on Major League Baseball and the Miami Marlins and the Phillies and that situation. So it's something that we'll talk about throughout the day. Speaking of the day, Chase Parham and I will tape a Oxford Exxon podcast. We'll do a live show on our YouTube stream. Sorry to say scream. That makes no sense. Our stream at 1 o'clock, and then we'll make that podcast available for you on Tuesday morning. We have some other interviews lined up this week as well. A little bit of a weird week for both of us, but we're going to get you a full complement of podcast. I know Zach Berry and I are going to tape a soft verbal podcast tomorrow instead of Wednesday or Thursday. We'll have a mind on my money tomorrow as well. So we'll get you all the podcasts that you're used to. We're bringing you content. Chase and I will talk about Sam Williams' arrest on the afternoon show with any details we might be able to add. At this point, I don't know a whole lot. The Ole Miss outside linebacker, defensive end, was arrested on Friday. He was released on $25,000 bond. He was arrested on a charge of sexual battery. It's really all I know at this point. Ole Miss has suspended him from all team activities pending the legal process working its way out. So as of this moment, that's really all I feel particularly comfortable reporting about that. So we'll get to all of those things on this show and this network of podcasts over the course of this week. Glad that you are with us. Let me tell you first about the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. They've got the SpeedPass Plus app. They've got the Santa bags. You can, S-A-N-I, not Santa, but Santa. My accent's getting me the best of me there. You can fill up at the Oxford Exxon without touching anything, which is obviously the way to do that if you're concerned about germs and that kind of thing, and you should be. That's a great way for you to do that. You can go in. They've got rib specials. They've got great beer selection, snacks, everything. It's always clean, always professionally managed there at the Oxford Exxon. And just next door is the Oxford Crystal. Drive-through is open. Delivery options are available to you as well. Uber Eats, Grubhub, and more. They've got the new peach slushy, the new banana pudding shake, fresh cracked egg biscuits, bacon, egg, and cheese, sausage, egg, and cheese, scrambler breakfast bowls, the new Southern-style chicken strips, and more. All of that at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is that number. Call it. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours. Right to the bottom line. No hassle, no haggle. You get your quote. The rest is completely up to you. You can take that quote, shop it around, or you can do what I've done many times now, and that's hop into a Clark Ford. You'll absolutely love the product. You'll love the service. Corey wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy, and he'll prove that to you when you make the call to him, 662-257-1900. Guest, join us on the Rafters Music and Food Hotline. It's located, Rafters on the Water is open right now. The Rafters location on the square is not, but Rafters on the Water is. It's located at the Sardis Marina, so go experience outdoor dining unlike any place in North Mississippi. The menu offers shrimp, Mississippi catfish platters, gourmet burgers, Louisiana-style po' boys, Zydeco shrimp, crawfish egg rolls, fun cocktails, including their famous house frozen margarita, live music. It's basically a party every Wednesday and Thursday, 3:30 to 10, Friday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. If you would rather get curbside, you can do that as well. To go, curbside available, 662-712-6162. We're also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. More than 30 years old, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. Mortgage rates are really low right now. You're looking to refinance. You're looking to make a move. Now's a great time, and you want to get in touch with Jason Lowe and the people at Community Mortgage about it. All of their underwriting and their processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. They also have the float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's JLO, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. We are also brought to you by our friends Dead Soxy. Summer has certainly made its presence known with the current record temperatures across the nation. It's a great time to check out the Dead Soxy no-shows. 9 styles to choose from. You can find the style that fits your occasion. Use the promo code REBELGROVE at checkout. Get 30% off the best dress socks you'll ever put on. Check out the bundle packs currently on sale. You can use your promo code in addition to these already deeply discounted prices at deadsoxy.com. And don't forget, our friends at Blue Delta Jeans are excited to announce the October 16th Delta Cup Golf Tournament. That's the Friday before the scheduled Ole Miss Florida game in Oxford. Last year, Chase Parham and his group won the tournament. So this is an opportunity for you to take that trophy away from the reigning champs. Tee time is at 10 a.m. at Mossy Oak Golf Club. Your registration fee will include green and cart fees, food and drinks on the course, as well as a new pair of Blue Delta jeans. They're doing some Sunday tee times as well. Their prizes that are up for grabs, hole in one, closest to the pin, longest drive. You can find out a lot more about it by emailing Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, Tyler at BlueDeltaJeans.com to reserve your spot and find out more. And they look forward to seeing you on the course. Now let's go to the Rafters Music and Food Hotline and Andy Staples of The Athletic. Andy Staples of The Athletic, probably one of the, I don't know, two or three preeminent college football writers in the country. One of the absolute top college football slash restaurant review writers in the country, kind enough to spend some time with us here on this Monday morning. Andy, how are you?
I'm good.
I have learned in the COVID times, and today seems the most appropriate day in a long time to do it, to timestamp these interviews so that people, if they hear them 6 hours later, think, what the hell? It is 9:04 Central Daylight Time on Monday, July the 27th, as I talked to Mr. Staples. So just be aware, because there's a major sports story that's unfolding that we're about to talk about now that impacts a lot of things. So the Miami Marlins, Andy, went to Philadelphia over the weekend. They took 2 out of 3 from the Phillies. That is not the lead story. They now have 13 or 14, depending on which media source you use, positive COVID test, including a couple of coaches. They have the team still in Philadelphia. Their game tonight that was scheduled in Miami, I think against the Orioles, I don't know that it matters, has been canceled. This has always kind of been like the worst case scenario, you know, for one of these seasons getting started, was that they would have an outbreak on a team and that it would happen so quickly in the season. Yet here we are with Major League Baseball 4 days into the 2020 season, and it's a worst case scenario is unfolding. Just kind of, what are your thoughts?
It's really interesting to watch, because you wonder with college football, how's that going to work? Because baseball probably took the least amount of precautions compared to the other pro leagues that are back started now. The NBA is in a bubble, so they don't have any cases because nobody's allowed to leave, and limited amount of people allowed to come into it. Major League Baseball is trying to do what college football would like to do, which is have people living where they live normally, play, and travel. And if it can rip through a team like that quickly, that's probably not a good sign. Now, we'll see what Major League Baseball does. Do they knock out the Marlins for now and try to keep playing? Do they do – because we don't know what's going to happen with the other teams. And as you said, we got to timestamp this, because by the time somebody listens to it, MLB might have done something different.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen one report from a Marlins beat writer that – it seemed a little hyperbolic, but I'm not going to completely judge that. He's waiting for the email that says the MLB season has been canceled. That seems like, on the surface at least, a pretty dramatic overreaction right away. Depending on, you know, did how many of the Phillies played the Marlins over the weekend? Did they get exposed to it? Did the umpires get exposed to it? Are people positive or people negative? Can you clean up a locker, a clubhouse? The Yankees were scheduled and are, as of this moment, still scheduled to play the Phillies tonight in Philadelphia. Can you clean that up? I mean, there's a lot of questions that I think Major League Baseball would want answered before they just canceled the season.
Right, exactly. I don't think you do that right off the bat. You sort of maybe pause and take stock, but it's tough. I mean, and the thing is, you've got delays in testing. You've got delays in latency of the virus. It's really hard to figure out. It's a moving target to figure out who's infected when and who's contagious when. So, it's going to be a really messy one. But the thing is, like, the English Premier League just finished its season. They managed to get it in. Korean baseball managed to get a season in. So it's not impossible, but as we can see, it's not going to be easy.
No, it's not. You're right. English Premier League not only got a season in, they really got a season in pretty flawlessly.
And they had positive tests.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, look, college football, let's hypothetically say that there is a college football season. There are going to be positive tests. I mean, that is an absolute certainty. You can you can lock that down. It's going to be about how college football teams, how programs, how conferences deal with those tests. How do you? That's what has to be. I mean, if you're Greg Sankey this morning, you're probably spending a lot more time watching the Florida Marlins situation than you ever, Miami Marlins, than you ever dreamed that you would be today, because this is how Major League Baseball reacts to this is going to set a precedent in some ways. Because you're right, you can't compare college football to the NBA because it's an absolute impossibility to have a bubble in college right. football. It's not in any shape, form, or fashion realistic. So you can almost throw them out. Major League Baseball for now is the one, at least on American soil, that you could really pay attention to. And if you're the NFL, I'm guessing you're really watching this because they're due to open training camps this week.
Well, and the NFL is interesting to me because they could conceivably try to bubble if they wanted, if they could get the Players Association to agree on it. And they're pros. They can tell them, you've got to show up here if the PA agrees to it. They could do it. It would be pretty difficult because that's a lot of players. But they might have to try. I mean, think about this. In baseball, when do you have contact during the game? If you have a play at the plate, Now, I would imagine with baseball, transmission's probably more in the clubhouse than anything else.
Yeah.
Because, guys are close together, breathing the same air, all that stuff. But you can probably work on that. You can probably do some things to mitigate that. With football, you've got guys hitting each other a lot. I mean, that's what I talked to a head coach last week, and they were talking about all the different things they've done in the past few weeks during workouts to keep players apart and keep them, you keep the backup quarterback separate from the starting quarterback and have them in a different workout group. So if one of them gets it, they don't both get it. But here's the thing, and this is what that coach said. At some point, you have to play football.
Yeah, and at some point, exactly. At some point on every play in football, there's contact. Every single play in football, there's contact. And so it's, I don't know. I don't know enough about kind of where we are in terms of, I talked to people around the league, and 2 weeks ago there was this real negativity, and then late last week there was a kind of a budding optimism that I think we're going to get it in. I mean, they were starting to talk about formats for games and that kind of thing. But I'm with you. Every time I've asked, okay, well, when can you start doing contact? The answer is always, well, probably sometime in mid-August, and that's when it gets interesting.
Well, and that's the thing. And then you've got Oklahoma and Kansas scheduling games for August 29th, which means if they're going to start practice, officially speaking, they would be allowed to start practice Friday. So is that going to happen? I don't know. I mean, it's a tough one. And the thing is, we've talked about the whole idea of playing in spring, and it has been very much poo-pooed by the people in charge of the sport. And I understand why, because they don't want to continue paying to operate their athletic departments. And then something happens in January or December and you can't have a spring season. And then all of a sudden you've got $0 coming in. You've already paid for a semester, which if you're operating an SEC athletic department, you've got another, 20, 30 million of sunk cost. So it's going to be a very difficult next few weeks for them.
So as of this moment, you've talked to, I can't even imagine how many coaches and ADs and commissioners that you've talked to on and off the record over the course of the last 4 months. It's probably more than you could even count. Do you have a general, notwithstanding the Marlins information that's come out this morning, which I know is not completely fair, but do you have a general sense of what we're looking at in terms of a college football season?
Well, I thought I did. But that's changed a few times, because when the numbers were down in June and everybody was getting really optimistic about, okay, start the season on time, you may be able to get most, if not all, of the season in, then it was very optimistic. Then the numbers spiked. Then it looked a lot more pessimistic. And then you saw Major League Baseball come back, you saw the NBA come back. Okay, maybe there's a way to do this. And so that was where we're at the end of last week, is maybe there's a way to do this. This Marlins thing throws another monkey wrench into it, or I don't even know if it's throwing a monkey wrench into it, just exposing the reality of the situation. And, you know, my thing is the school presidents have to be willing to accept a certain level of risk. They have to be willing to accept a certain level of positive tests. But I don't know that you're going to find a group of school presidents together that are willing to do that. And I'll be curious to see what Major League Baseball does, because, you know, they're not under the guise of these are student athletes. These are professional athletes, you know. So if Major League Baseball winds up shutting down more than just the Marlins, then you got to worry about college football.
I agree completely.
If they just say, hey, look, we're going to play without the Marlins, okay, maybe that's the model for it. If they play without the Marlins and it works and they don't have another outbreak, then and bring the Marlins back when they can, then maybe it is doable. But I'm not sure that's something you can answer right now. And one of the things that I've thought that the college football people should do is let the NFL start training camp. Maybe even let them play a few games before you figure out what you can do. Because if they can't do it, you can't do it. If they can do it, there's a chance you can do it too.
The Oxford Exxon podcast also brought to you by Pinnacle Trust. Pinnacle Trust, based in Madison, Mississippi. They represent clients in more than 20 states. They have advisors in multiple states as well. They provide detailed, specialized investment management, financial planning, retirement planning for individuals and businesses, and so much more. They treat investing like a commodity. Decisions are made using objective information and research, not emotions. So regardless of your level of wealth, Pinnacle Trust will sit down with you, listen to your goals, study your expenses, put forth a comprehensive, detailed financial and retirement plan that's built just for you. Cookie cutter financial planners put you in a box. Pinnacle Trust builds a box just for you. Go to pintrust.com. That's PINNtrust.com. Mention that you heard about Pinnacle Trust on the podcast. You'll get 10% off your first year's fees. We're also brought to you by John Edwards of Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you're needing to get away, it's been a long quarantine, and you just need a break, want to know what's open, where the deals are, John can help you. He's part of Virtuoso. It's a worldwide network of travel partners that allows him to supply his clients with added values and unique benefits simply not available to other travelers. What you do is you give him a call, you give him an email, you give him some parameters, and give him a budget, and then sit back. He'll come up with a ton of options that you will not be able to find on your own. 901-494-3387 or jedwards at regencytravel.net. First-time clients can save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan's the place to go. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. They offer their customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000 and refund ATM fees nationwide. To learn more, go to liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Brought to you by Bluff City Advisory Group, dedicated to building the future you desire. Founded in Memphis in 2019, their team is comprised of established and seasoned financial experts who came together to serve individuals and families of their beloved hometown. Bluff City values providing quality advice, experience, and access to all their clients, and they invite an open dialogue beyond your annual review. They believe that everyone deserves financial security, so no matter your level of wealth or financial goal, they will serve as an advocate and guide to grow a portfolio that is fruitful and sustainable for you. 901-365-3447 or email Ben, B-E-N, at BluffCityAdvisory.com. And we're brought to you by Bain, Moss, and Bowen, PLLC. Located in historic downtown Corinth, Mississippi, their firm practices a wider range of law, from DUI defense to car wrecks to representing government entities. Bain, Moss, and Bowen is the only firm in Mississippi made up of a sitting state legislator, a former assistant district attorney, and a former circuit judge. Their experience is unmatched in that regard, and you can tap into that experience by visiting them at 618 East Waldron Street in Corinth or by calling them at 662-287-1620. One of the options for the Marlins I've been seeing this morning already is, you know, they have a 60-man squad. There was a 60-man squad for a reason. Now, you're really dipping into it at this point. But if you're willing to admit, and I think that most of us who cover sports are willing to admit that this is a one-off year for every sport. This is where...
Yeah, there's an asterisk on every season.
Where getting the season in is more important than winning the games. Getting the money and playing the games is more important than winning the games. If you're the Marlins, I mean, you do have the manpower to bring some people from your taxi squad to your regular squad. Maybe it's middle of the end of the week and go, hey, we got 30 guys. We replaced a couple of coaches. We're going to play and, you know, and go from there. I mean, it doesn't have to be the end. That's why I think before anybody makes these sweeping assertions on Major League Baseball, you've got to see if the Phillies were impacted, because I assume that all of the Phillies are getting tested today.
Yeah.
You know, if maybe the Phillies come back with no positives, it's a very good sign. You know, if the Cubs and Reds play tonight at, I think it's 6:40 Eastern, 5:40 Central, if that game happens in Cincinnati, that's a really good sign that the Reds don't have an outbreak, obviously, because I'm going to guess that the Reds all got tested this morning.
Yeah.
You know, so those are all things to watch for. Back to football for a minute. Before this Marlins thing, were you starting to think that everyone was going to go to a conference only schedule? This maybe eight plus one format that's been bandied about a lot with SEC, Big 12, ACC?
I don't even know if it was going to be that. I think they were trying to work on that, but I think conference only was more likely. Just playing within your conference, because you can control more variables that way. But that decision, I would think, in the SEC, you probably see it get made by the end of this week. Although, again, with this Marlins thing, I imagine they are following it very closely. They may be pushing more decisions down the road because of this to get a little more info. But no, I assume that they would try to save those SEC-ACC rivalry games. But the more people I talked to over the last week or so, the more I thought, all right, maybe they're just going to go conference only.
I would think that today pushes it further towards conference only than anything that's happened before.
Yeah, although, I mean, again, let's take South Carolina and Clemson, for example.
Okay.
You know, wouldn't it be better if you basically agreed on protocols to just bus one to the other than to fly them both somewhere else?
Yeah, it'd be much safer from
a conference game.
Yeah, it'd be much safer to play a South Carolina Clemson game than it would a South Carolina Missouri game, where one of those teams has to travel, you know, across multiple states.
Right, and Georgia and Georgia Tech, and Florida and Florida State, Kentucky, Louisville. I mean, those make sense, and obviously, not everybody can do that. But you could do things within your own state. I mean, Ole Miss could play Southern Miss. Ole Miss could play Jackson State. You know, there are ways to do stuff like that. But it's just, I don't know that they're going to want to bring in another set of variables. And when you have another conference, that's another set of variables.
I know you get asked this a lot, because I get asked it a lot. People say, well, what about bowls? What about a playoff? And I know that's way down the line, but it's what you get used to as a fan. You know, seasons are about... You know, certain program seasons are about getting to the playoff and playing for a national title. At some program seasons are about getting to a bowl game for the first time in whatever. Ole Miss hasn't been to a bowl game since that January 1, 2016 Sugar Bowl. So getting six wins in a traditional season and getting to a bowl game would have been an accomplishment. It's my opinion bowls and playoffs are really unlikely this year. Am I being premature?
Well, I think you need to have a season first. I mean, you can't have those without a season, and the season feels very much in jeopardy right now. So that's the thing. I mean, if they can start playing, then they can worry about bowls and a playoff and all that stuff. That's something you can figure out as things go along. Let's say they get things up and running in September or October and they're playing. Then you decide, okay, in a couple months we're going to have some bowl games, we're going to have a playoff, this is how we're going to do the playoff. But you don't need to worry about that right now. I mean, that's not even if you run a bowl, yeah, you're worrying a lot about that right now. But if you're running college football, you don't need to worry about that right now. You need to decide, can we play games? If we can play games, how are we going to play games? And then if you get games up and running, you can figure out all that other stuff later.
If you're college football, you wait to start practices until the NFL has started training camp, right?
I would think so. And then look, I mean, that's not that long. The NFL starts training camp this week.
Yeah, tomorrow for a lot of teams.
Yeah, so you will get some info. You will get some ideas. And look, NFL people have been calling college people to ask them questions because, remember, the NFL players were not at facilities. You know, so the college players who were back doing voluntary workouts were the only ones kind of providing data on that front. And so the NFL people were asking the college strength coaches, trainers, all those people, how are you doing this? What's it look like? How do you do the testing? And so the NFL has been sort of cheating off college football's paper for the last few months. My guess is you would see that flipped where the colleges would then start peppering the NFL people with questions. How did you practice? How did you keep, you know, how did you test? How did you do this? And I would think you'd need a few weeks of that to figure out how you want to try to do it in college, because again, these aren't pro athletes. You know, you do have the possibility on some campuses of regular students coming back, and then that adds a whole new element to this.
Yeah.
So I just think they need to get as much data as they can before they try, because if you don't have a good plan in place and then you try, you probably wind up with a bunch of this Marlin, you know, a bunch of these Marlin situations happening all at once, and then what do you do at that point?
That's why I've thought for a while that it's why you mentioned this though about Oklahoma and I guess it was Kansas State that moved games up to August the 29th, which is a full almost 2 weeks before the NFL plays a game. I found that baffling because I talked to a lot of college football people who said, you know, what we'd really love to do is kind of wait till the NFL's played a game or two. Like, we could start late September. If we're just playing 8 or 9 games, we could start late September and easily get 8 or 9 games in if everything went well. That way we sort of have a blueprint to follow. And frankly, the NFL sort of, you know, from a – people talk about optics, and optics is a weird word. But from an optics standpoint, if the NFL plays and it goes off kind of without a hitch, it makes it a lot easier for you optically to play with amateurs. Yeah.
Well, and you've also got the NCAA aspect of it with the other sports, because the NCAA has a meeting of the Board of Governors set for August 4th, I believe, and that is supposedly when they're going to decide on whether they're going to do fall championships or not, and that would be, you know, FCS football, then it would also be volleyball, soccer, cross country, the sports that are typically played in the fall. And the thinking is if they cancel the fall sports championships, it's probably a signal that the schools are going to cancel all those fall sports as well. So at that point, that leaves FBS football as the only one left, the only one standing, if the rest get canceled. And then you're in a real optics, you know, issue, because are you going to have those guys play but nobody else? That's going to be a hard – it's a tough look. Now, I do think there's some leagues and some people and some schools that would say, you know what, optics be damned.
Yeah.
There's a major economic catastrophe coming if we can't play any football. And they're right. They're absolutely right. So what do you do at that point? Because I would imagine that they will not worry about the optics if they can play games and make enough money to keep their athletic departments afloat. But if they think there's a chance that they'll get started and have to stop, I just don't know if they're going to try, because that would be more of an economic disaster probably.
If that happens, and I agree with you completely, the next big decision, and the president or the AD, I can't remember who it was, I guess it was the AD at Iowa State, he really laid this out in...
Yeah, Jamie Pollard, absolutely. And what people... I was not understanding that before he did that, and then I talked to some other ADs that explained it in a little more detail, but
yeah.
Essentially, you run your... You incur all your operating costs if you're going to plan on a spring season. you're still running all your football stuff. You're still doing all that stuff. And if you do that, there better be a spring season. Otherwise, you're in even bigger trouble.
Otherwise, you took on more water, more debt. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the issue they're dealing with right now. And I wouldn't be shocked if it comes to football not being played, if their thought is that it's not possible to do, that you're going to see a bunch of people furloughed in athletic departments, you're going to see a bunch of people laid off, and it will not be pretty. They're not set up to deal with this. They were never deal with the idea of no football season. So that's why I think they're going to try to do everything they can to play one.
If there's no season, Andy, and if what happens, and I think you and I are both on the same page here, I think the odds of a spring season are really low. Nobody seems to have a taste for it at all. There's multiple reasons why.
I think it makes perfect sense if you're willing to accept the fact that, you know, the locked first-rounders aren't going to play. That's fine.
Sure.
That's not that many people, but –
that's like the Marlins taxi squad thing. That's where you have to acknowledge that if there's a spring 2021 season replacing the fall 2020 season, you have to be willing, from the media to the coaches to the players to the fans to everyone, they have to be willing to accept that this is not going to be a typical season. This isn't going to be the same quality. It's a restaurant comparison. This is, hey, we're not going to the fancy place. We're going to Chili's. We're going to have a Chili's meal, and that's where we're going.
And you can have a fine meal at Chili's.
Of course, exactly, right.
As I have pointed out on Twitter a few times the last few weeks. But what people need to understand is there's probably an asterisk on if you get the 2020 season in, probably on the 2021 season too, it's going to be weird for a while. So whatever they get up and running, it's going to be weird. And you just have to accept that, you know, the idea that the lock first rounders will play a fall season if it's an 8-game or 10-game conference only season that doesn't start till October, that's no guarantee. So that part of it's not the issue. The issue in the spring is more the financial aspect of it for the athletic departments. Are they willing to roll the dice, basically, that there will be a season in the spring if they decide to move it there, because if there's not, they're in deep, deep trouble.
Define deep, deep trouble. What does that look like?
It's just millions in debt that they've got to cut. I had one person tell me that they'd have to cut like 2/3 of their budget. And if you do that, what do you have left? You're doing debt service. I guess you're paying your highest paid coaches probably, because you don't want to not pay them. And then absolutely essential people that keep you up and running.
Because if you don't play football, you play nothing. I mean, you play nothing. There's no basketball season.
You're not gonna. Well, I mean, maybe there's a basketball season, because remember, Power 5 schools are a little bit different, but everybody beyond the Power 5 needs an NCAA tournament to be played. They can't have 2 years of no NCAA tournament.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because if you can't play football, which is an outdoor sport, the NBA's in a bubble, but you can't do a bubble with college basketball, I don't think. I mean,
yeah, basketball you can push till February if you need to.
And go February to May. Yeah, I guess you could. But it's the same deal, right? Is that you're having to keep the shop open, betting on that.
But that's a lot smaller shop.
That's true.
That's the one thing. And then obviously you're going to bring football back as quickly as you can, because that's where the real money is. But that's the thing is, how many people are you furloughing? How many people are you actually going to employ if you're saying we're not doing this again until X date? And that's the part that all these athletic directors are trying to avoid. And the big reason why they want to play a fall season and not any other kind of season, because they avoid that if they get games in the fall and they get TV money and, you know, they know that money's coming. But we don't know that right now. And that's their biggest issue. I feel for them, because I can't imagine having all those people's livelihoods, you know, on my watch, and I've got to make a decision one way or the other. And it's got to be gut-wrenching for all these guys.
Oh, it has to be. Has to be, because these are also your, these are coworkers, these are friends, you know, they're,
yeah,
you know, their spouses and their families. And I mean, you know, your kid plays baseball with their kid. And I mean, this is not a collection of robots here. These are real people, wow, with real relationships who go to the same Christmas parties, for God's sake. Yeah. I mean,
and I realize this has happened everywhere. It's happened in a lot of industries and everybody's dealing with it. So I'm not trying to make it seem like this particular industry we're talking about is special in any way, because it's like everybody else. You've got to deal with it, but you still don't want to be the person who has to tell everybody, "Hey, sorry, we can't do it anymore."
You did a story late last week. I think it was Friday that you published it. Maybe it was Saturday. I lose track of the days, if I'm totally honest with you. It was on Ole Miss football. I know that you talked to some people over there.
It was sad. There was a certain arrest that hadn't become public yet. So that person was on the depth chart.
When you and I were talking, he had been arrested, and I did not know it. I was not withholding information from you. I did not find out until Saturday night.
Yeah, nobody outside the people involved knew what was going on. So, but yeah, I mean that's sort of the risk you run sometimes with this stuff.
Yeah, that was kind of old school. Being outdated as opposed to all the COVID stuff. I know you've known Lane Kiffin for a long time. Obviously, this was not the start that he envisioned when he took the Ole Miss job back in early December. This has been, for him, a logistical nightmare in many ways. He's been unable to recruit, really, at all. It's been a dead period that now appears will go and go and go and go, and I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. But just from talking to, I don't know how much you got to talk to Lane himself or people around him, you know, what's the sense of the job that is staring him in the face?
It's a big job, and there's a lot to do, and they don't have the ability to do what they've been hired to do at this point, and not through any fault of anyone. I mean, it's just because of COVID. They can't do the recruiting that they were hired to do. I mean, that they were hired to overhaul this roster. The idea was that Ole Miss was going to get some star power again, that Lane was going to recruit, you know, difference makers, and that they would be able to improve over time. I don't think anybody thought it was going to be an overnight solution, because, you know, I think if you look at Ole Miss, at the roster, what they inherited are some really good pieces on the offense in the skill positions and a decent offensive line. But defensively, that roster needs to be overhauled. There's a lot that needs to be done there. And it wasn't going to happen overnight. So I think they were thinking this was going to be kind of a transition year anyway. And you figure out what you want to do offensively. You figure out what you want to do at quarterback. I don't know that if anything had been normal, I don't know that Lane Kiffin would be ready to name a starting quarterback right now. I think even under normal circumstances, probably would have gone in playing Plumlee and Corral just to try to figure out how the offense works best. Because I don't think they were looking at a season where it was bowl game or bust or anything like that. I think they understood that they had a little time. And now it's completely different, because you still have not gotten to see those guys on the field. You know, if you get to start camp, you'll get to see them on the field, but you still don't really know how you want to run that offense. We know from what Lane has done in terms of hiring, when you hire Jeff Levy and Randy Clements, and you had Kendall Briles as your OC at Florida Atlantic, we know what your idea is, that you're angling toward something similar to what Baylor was running. I don't think it's going to be completely identical to that. Just like Florida Atlantic's offense when Kendall was there was not identical to what they ran at Baylor. But Lane likes that, the idea of an offense that can get you some free yards schematically. And what I mean by that is, you know, you push those receivers out really wide. You force those corners to come really wide. And then you can watch. You have the quarterback look at the safety, and he kind of tells you what's going to happen. You know what the defense is looking at and what they're expecting. And so, I think Lane likes that. I think he likes the fact that the tempo they run, if they hit a big pass play, you can get a free 5-6 yards on the ground the next play, just by getting lined up properly and running the ball. And then you add in the fact that they do have a decent offensive line and some great backs. I mean, Ely and Connor are great backs, and they're young. And you can really do some things in that kind of offense. And the question is, do you want to do it with quarterback who is a massive threat to run, but maybe not so accurate? Or do you want a quarterback who's a little bit more accurate, and then you let the backs handle that stuff on the ground? I don't know what'll work best. And I don't think they know what'll work best until they see it on the field.
I mean, Plumlee is the easy answer if and only if he becomes a far more accurate passer. I mean,
if Plumlee completes 60% of his passes, this is not a discussion. It is Plumlee, and that will be a very difficult offense to stop.
But a year ago, he didn't do that. He, and again, he was a true freshman, and I think it's sometimes we forget that Corral was just a redshirt freshman really playing for the first time, and Plumlee was a true freshman absolutely playing for the first time, and I'm not sure that even those of us who covered it were completely fair, and I don't know that we pointed that out as many times as we probably should have, that playing quarterback in the SEC as a freshman is hard.
Yes, as
a rule, it's just hard, and most guys who play quarterback in the SEC as a freshman struggle, and especially when you play on a team that was as challenged defensively as Ole Miss was. But the thing about Plumlee last year was that he did a lot of his damage. It was what was weird about that season. He did so much of his damage, Andy, after games had seemingly got out of hand. Now he made those games exciting. And man, he put up some plays and some highlight reel plays. Like, I mean, he just tore LSU up in the third quarter of that game in Oxford.
Right, but it was 31-7 at halftime.
Yeah.
So what does that really mean?
Yeah, and that's where the question comes in, because it's when you put the perspective to it, you're like, yeah, but what did he do? And then, you know, and Corral got off to a shaky start, which was what everyone expected, mind you. And then he got hurt, and then he came back, and he didn't have his job, and so he. You know, I'm sure that there was a part of him that, at least internally, was like, "Hey, this isn't exactly what I thought the deal was," and maybe he pouted, maybe he sulked. I don't know. Maybe he felt sorry for himself. I don't know. He's a young guy. He's a fiery guy. And then late in the year, you know, it got overshadowed by the whole Elijah Moore celebration in the end zone.
Yeah, he did take them to.
He brought him back. He got him. Yeah. And if they make an extra point, that game goes to overtime, and he's the reason it got there.
Yep. Now let me give you some numbers from elsewhere in the SEC West that are interesting.
Okay.
So when Kellen Mond was a true freshman, he completed 51.5% of his passes, which actually I think is a little bit lower than Plumlee last year. As a sophomore, Kellen Mond completed 57.3% of his passes. As a junior, 61.6. So it is possible for a guy, and Kellen's a good runner too. He's not as good a runner as Plumlee, but he is a good runner. It is possible to have that person, you know, get better as they get older, which obviously is common sense. But if that happens for Plumlee, he is so dangerous on the ground that I think it changes the way defenses would have to play Ole Miss. If they're terrified of him running, and he can make the easy throws, which is, you know, that was a bit of a problem last year. But if he can make the easy throws, and they've got some good receivers, they need to not lock in on Elijah Moore, obviously. They need to have some other guys step forward, but they have the talent to do that. And also, you know, Ely can catch passes out of the backfield too. If they can make easy throws, complete the easy throws, then you have him, you know, the threat of him running. That is a very tough thing to stop. But if you think he's only going to complete half his passes, and he's not going to be able to hit those little, you know, confidence builder dump offs that an offense like this should have built in, then you're not as worried about it. But if he's hitting some guys in space 4 yards down the field, and all of a sudden, you know, they have some room to run and they're gaining 8 yards on that play, well, now you are in real, you're in a real bind when the next play starts and he puts the ball in Jerry and Ely's belly, and you don't know if it's going to be an Ely run, a Plumlee run, or a throw.
Yeah, you know, and what Kiffin did at Alabama on Saban's staff that he got a lot of acclaim for. I mean, there was, you know, there's two storylines with him. It was, you know, all the stuff off the field that people expected or whatnot. But and then there was the on the field. He was successful there with completely different types of quarterbacks, completely different types of offenses. One
Blake
offense,
Blake Sims, Jake Coker. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, those were not household names. And at one point, I mean, they did it with wide receivers as the primary weapon. At one point, they did it with the running back as the primary weapon. I mean, he has always proven. And if you talk to anybody who knows him, and you know him far better than I do at this point, they all say the exact same thing, which is a little bit aloof, a little bit whatever. Offensive genius. Everyone always says offensive genius. Sees things with his eyes very quickly, processes it with his brain, and comes up with a plan fast.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. And, you know, has a very good understanding of how everything works together. I mean, it was interesting talking to him for the story I did. We were talking about the offense that Kendall Briles and Jeff Levy and Randy Clements used to run at Baylor. And just the way it works. And, you know, he was explaining that when he was at Alabama, they would go and look at different things, at different schemes. And he never understood why nobody wanted to look at the Baylor one. Because, you know, people, even among tempo people and offensive people, it was still viewed as a little bit gimmicky. And he was like, I don't know why it's viewed as gimmicky. These are sound principles that work. Because he, at the time, he was trying to figure out, okay, what is Chip Kelly doing at Oregon that works so well? Why does that work so well? And he was looking at different offenses. They looked at Tom Herman's offense that he ran at Ohio State that he took to Houston. You know, what was it about those things that made them tough to stop? And he was trying to incorporate all those different things. And he did decide to go look at what the veer and shoot, which is what you see Dino Babers running at Syracuse and a few other people you've seen run. And he's like, you know, there are parts of this that really work. So why not incorporate some of this stuff? And I think that's why you did see, you think about the quarterbacks he had. He had Blake Sims, who was a guy who they wanted to move, or they moved him to running back and they moved him back. And Blake Sims had a statistically great year as the starting quarterback at Alabama. Jake Coker, then a more conventional dropback passer, he had a great year. They won a national championship. And then you got Jalen Hurts that first year as a true freshman, not the most accurate passer in the world, at least according to what you see, you know, just right off the bat. But, you know, he completed 62.8% of his passes his freshman year. And a lot of that was they schemed ways to make it easy for him to complete passes.
And it was one of the most impressive coached games that I saw. It was the, I guess that was what,
2016.
Yeah. You know, they came here and played, and Ole Miss was an offensive juggernaut early in that season. I know they lost to Florida State in Tallahassee, but it was because the defense was non-existent, and they just destroyed Georgia. And when they played Alabama, they were, I mean, Chad Kelly was putting up numbers that day. And
oh yeah, and I was at that game.
Yeah, and Alabama doesn't win that game if it doesn't have a ridiculously well-called offensive game, especially, you know, because Hurts gets sacked by, I can't remember who hit him, Marquise Haynes, I think. And
yeah, and then they scooped and scored. I mean, that game probably should have turned Ole Miss's way at that point, and then that Alabama came back and scored, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess they're going
to
be all right.
Yeah, it was a lot of credit to Hurts and a lot of credit to Kiffin, because if they panic a little bit there or get away from the plan or get away from what works for Hurts, that game potentially gets really out of hand, and history has a little different story, you know, obviously. You know, the other story that Andy, that you touched on it in your story in The Athletic, and we haven't had a chance to really write it as much as I'd like to, and hopefully we'll get to at some point they'll play, but there's a lot of attention, obviously and understandably, on Lane Kiffin, but DJ Jerkins on the staff too. You know, he was turning Maryland into a very respectable program, and that might be putting it conservatively with what he was getting done there when they had the issue with the heat stroke and the offensive lineman that died in a preseason training workout, if you will. And Durkin paid the price for that, whether it was fairly or not, he paid the price for that. And then he went and did some NFL stuff with the Falcons or whatnot. Lane Kiffin hires him as the defensive coordinator, and people inside the program have really raved about his organizational skills during this pandemic of the last 4.5-5 months. And, you know, he's a guy that you talked about this, and you're exactly right. He's a guy, because of how bad Ole Miss has been on defense the last few years, he doesn't have to do a whole lot to look like he did a whole lot.
Yeah, and I think Mike McIntyre deserves a little bit of credit, because it wasn't a ton to work with. He made them statistically a little bit better.
Agreed.
In his time there. But yeah, I mean, Durkin needs to get better players, obviously. But a little bit of it will be just, you know, schematically be better, be more disciplined. And, you know, all of a sudden, things look a lot better. Because offensively, I think Ole Miss is going to be okay. So really, it's about, you know, can you be more disciplined on defense? Can you avoid giving up some big plays? Now, I think a lot of it, with the thinness of that roster, they may have some issues. And I, listen, as we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, we don't know when football is getting played next, but this could be true of this fall or next fall, I think, in terms of Ole Miss's defenses roster. So this fall, this spring, next fall, however you want to play it, they've got to get a little bit deeper, or they're going to get worn out by some of the teams they've got to play. And that part, you know, I don't know how well Durkin's going to be able to fix that with the way things are in recruiting, where you've got this never-ending dead period. You're not really able to go out and evaluate. One thing he did at Maryland was he improved the roster over a couple of years. And if he can do that at Ole Miss, improve the roster, get them to be a little more disciplined on D, and let what Kiffin does, you know, let Kiffin do what Kiffin does offensively, then you have you've got something going there. You know, you become one of those teams that, you know, they should beat the comparable teams in the West, and then they become a team that can scare one of the bigger name teams in the West, because offensively they're still talented. They've got a good scheme. Defensively, if they have a little more talent, a little more discipline, they're going to be pretty good. I mean, but that's the thing. Durkin has a chance to kind of reinvent himself. He's got a chance to you know, rebuild his reputation at Ole Miss. And he'll be dealing with players of a talent level that are similar to what he had at Maryland at the start. And then it'll be up to him to make that roster better. But if you look at what he did at Maryland, the roster was upgraded by the time he left. So my guess is he will be able to upgrade Ole Miss's roster too.
You had a story on July the 24th, it's really good, that is sort of indicative of a, not indicative, it's something that I think is going to come out of all this, whether there's a season, a partial season this fall, or whether there's a season in the spring, or whether we don't play again until next fall. And that's, you built it around Amari Cooper, the former Alabama wide receiver, about how he, if he'd been in this current class, the class of 21, he probably ends up at a Group of Five school, didn't have much junior film, wouldn't have had a chance to show out in camps and all that stuff like he did. There are going to be a lot of Amari Coopers out there, and potentially kids who not only don't have a lot of junior film and don't have opportunity at camps, but where they don't even have a senior season. I mean, there's going to be not only a lack of opportunity for coaches to evaluate, but in many cases, a lack of opportunity for players to put anything on film, to show any tangible signs of improvement, which is going to make the evaluation process for these college coaches an absolute nightmare.
Oh yeah, it's going to be the worst evaluated couple of classes in the internet era of college football. Now, you know, before that, there were some pretty poorly evaluated classes because, you know, they're just you didn't have the tools that you have now. But since you've had all these, you know, ratings and camps and everything else, and remember, we're not talking about 24/7 rankings or rival rankings here. We're talking about the evaluations of the coaches themselves, and those are the ones that are really worried about this. What it may come down to is how good are your contacts? How good are your high school coach contacts? How good are your 7-on-7 coach contacts? How good are your trainer contacts? Where somebody you trust someone enough to not BS you when they say, "Hey, this kid's really good," or "I know that kid's got some hype, but this is the kid over here that you really want." You've got to have people you trust. If you do have a good network of people you trust, then you stand as a non-Alabama, non-Ohio State, non-Clemson type school to get some players that you normally would not have access to. Because the way the process works, and we were just talking about with Amari Cooper, like Amari Cooper was injured his junior year, had a hip injury. He's also behind a couple D1 guys, Eli Rogers, who played at Louisville, the most prominent one. So Amari gets to 7-on-7 March and April before his senior year and blows up. And so that's when he's on people's radars. He's not getting a ton of offers, but he's on radars. Then they have spring practice at Miami Northwestern. Well, obviously, Teddy Bridgewater just came out of there. Eli Rogers just came out of there. So there's tons of coaches there. They're all watching. So now he's really on radars. He's got offers. He goes to camps. The trip they went on was Florida State and Alabama. Dominates the Florida State camp. Dominates the Alabama camp. By the end of June, he's a 4-star, and everybody wants him. Well, those camps are where you become that.
Yep.
In the class of 2021, most players have already had that experience. So 2021, for the most part, will be better evaluated than 2022 because – like the guys that Ole Miss is a little bit different because they have a first-year coaching staff, but let's say Alabama. The guys that Alabama is signing for the class of 2021, the guys who are committed, they've been to an Alabama camp. You know, the guys Clemson signing this year, they've been to a Clemson camp. They went last year. But the camps this year that would have happened in June, that's where your Alabamas, your Ohio States, your Clemsons would have been building their boards. They would have been saying, okay, here's who we're taking in the class of 2022, or here's who we're going after seriously. And now they'll still have a group of guys that are going to be there. For instance, there are guys who blew up as sophomores that anybody with two eyes knows are really good, and Ohio State and Clemson and Alabama are going to offer them. But there are other guys who maybe didn't really come into their own until the end of their junior year, or they had a growth spurt, or something changed because puberty is crazy and they don't know about them yet. And they may not find out about them. They just might not have the opportunity to find out about them. So yeah, there are going to be some guys that you wouldn't normally have access to if you're an Ole Miss, if you're Mississippi State, if you're Arkansas, if you're that level, that you could get in on and sign, and if you can develop them, you're going to have great players. Now, the exact opposite is true as well. There could be guys that you're told, these guys are great, you know, the high school coach says, this guy's awesome, he's the best I ever had, a 24/7 report season really likes him, and then you sign him and you're like, oh man, this guy can't play. So it's a double-edged sword, but
yeah.
Yes, the good evaluators who have a really good network of people they trust, they might be able to take advantage of this.
It's where, you know, of the new coaches in the SEC, as crazy as this sounds, the one that – and please tell me if you think I'm an idiot – the one who kind of has the natural advantage here because of where he's been, depending on what kind of relationships he built – is Pittman at Arkansas.
You're exactly right, because Sam Pittman's been running camps at Georgia.
So he's seen all these players. Yeah,
and he's seen the best players come through, And now he's got to be able to now, and he's looking at the time, he was looking at mostly linemen. He's got to be able to project what he saw as a 15-year-old, or can he project him accurately as a 20-year-old? But you're right. He got to see the most good players where he was.
Yeah, because Kiffin's at FAU, where you're recruiting a completely different kind of kid. I mean, you're really wasting your resources at FAU if you're going up against Alabama and Clemson and Tennessee and whatnot.
Right.
You're not winning those battles.
Well, and the thing is, he didn't bring most of his assistants from FAU. They were the ones going out in the spring and looking at these different schools in South Florida, where, yes, you would make a mental note of the super blue chip guy, even though you can't recruit him. You'd make a mental note that he's there. And that's somebody you need to follow just in case something happens. But yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't thought about that with Pittman, but you're right. He has been exposed to the most really good players. Mike Leach was at Washington State, obviously, so he wasn't even dealing with players from the South for the most part. I know they recruited Florida a little bit, but you know, you're right. Sam Pittman probably has had the best look at those people. And might be able to pluck, and we're not talking about like 10 guys. We're not talking about like a whole recruiting class worth of guys. We're talking about one or two, but given what we're talking about, it could be one or two big difference makers, like you mentioned, at a place like Arkansas. Like if Arkansas could get two guys that Georgia would normally want, but Georgia doesn't really know about, or just. You know, Georgia's going for more proven commodities.
That's the key. You just nailed it right there at the end. It's the proven commodity part. I've talked to coaches that are like, yeah, you know, we hear about these kids, this, that, and the other, but the way we've built this is we get them to our camp and we evaluate them with our eyes and we look at certain things. And it's not that we don't trust the high school coach or we don't trust the 7-on-7 coach or that we don't even trust the film. It's just we aren't going to do this unless we can see them with our own eyes.
Yeah.
And so that's where guys fall through.
Philosophy right there. Clemson, I mean, and look at what they've done, because Clemson gets 5-star guys. They also get some 3-star guys who wind up being first round draft picks. So they're good evaluators.
It's Alabama's the exact same way.
Absolutely. And Ohio State. I mean, that's the thing. You don't get to be the best by just saying, oh, we're going to take the guys that 24/7 likes the best.
No, of course not. No.
And the thing is, I want to be fair to the folks at Rivals and 24/7 and all that, because they are talking to coaches. Anybody who thinks that somebody from Rivals just walks out and you know, looks at some players and like, okay, these are going to be the rankings. That's not how it works.
No.
They're talking to multiple coaches at multiple schools, trying to get a sense of how those coaches feel about a player. And then this makes that harder for them too.
I appreciate
you don't know how they feel.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, because there's so many people who think that they just call like Alabama and go, "Hey, tell me the 50 people that you all have offered, and we're going to list them 1 through 50." It's not
right.
It's not like
no.
that. But
no,
it's really hard. I mean,
like, and the thing is, people understand like every coach has their blind spots, and every coach has their things they like,
their biases. So, yeah, sure, of course.
Right. And so the 24/7 Rivals reporters know that too. And so they're taking that into account when the coach, this is the greatest player I've ever seen, or this guy can't play.
Yeah, it's why they get, I mean, some of these guys get a little defensive, but I don't blame them. They get attacked because there's this assumption that they just throw a list against the wall. And the truth is they have umpteen Zoom calls. I mean, and they fight about it, and they get to see these guys, and you just nailed something. I didn't even thought about it like this. There have been some camps, and there gets an opportunity to do some evaluations, but both Rivals and 24/7 and anybody else who tries it for whatever criminally insane reason, they're going to get more wrong now because you have fewer opportunities to evaluate. Uh-huh. And so maybe you go see a kid on a day where his girlfriend broke up with him and he had a little bit of a sore throat and he just doesn't throw the ball very well that day and he doesn't really seem to give a damn. And you know, you didn't get that follow-up opportunity that you would have had in the past where the night before, you know, things with the girlfriend went a little bit differently and life is good and he's just slinging it all over the place where you go, okay, well, wait a minute. Maybe I caught him on a bad day. We need to look a third time now.
Well, and instead of being able to trade, info with the college coaches, they're going to have the college coaches pumping them for info,
yeah,
without much really to help with on the other end, because the college coaches are not going to have as much of an idea,
yeah,
of what they feel about somebody, because they're not going to be able to have seen them in person.
Yeah, where a kid was at, you know, an Ole Miss camp or a Alabama camp or whatever, and the coach can tell a guy from Rivals, yeah, we put him on the laser and he ran 4.48 on a laser. You know, we know what he can do. That's why we offered him. Or, you know, where there's this kid, like Kentrell Bullock, a running back at Ole Miss, who's in this freshman class. All the coaches fell in love with him last year. I don't think they knew much about him. He comes to camp and they fall in love with him and they're like, hey, we need to look at this a little closer. And they put him on the laser and put him in the 5-10-5 thing and all that stuff. And,
yep,
and all of a sudden you're like, whoa. And by the end of the day, his whole family's up in the office, you know, and what would you like in your coffee?
You know how many people that happened to this summer?
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah, it's game changer. Absolutely. It's really fascinating. It's why even when this is over, not just financially, because the financial ramifications could just be dramatic, but the product on the field's going to look different for a while, because the fallout from this is going to be more than even people like you and I who get paid to write about it every day. It's going to be more than even we think it's going to be.
There's so much stuff we haven't even thought of yet, and it'll all come up. I mean, that's kind of what – it kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, the college ADs and commissioners want to get a look at pro sports. So as bad as this Marlins thing is, I think they want to see how it gets handled. Because then they might have a better idea of how they might be.
Along those lines, it's we're about to, and I appreciate you've given me an hour of your time. I really appreciate it. It's 10:01 Central Daylight Time as I type this. Jeff Passan of ESPN, one of the top Major League Baseball writers out there, he says, updating the Miami Marlins outbreak, the total number of infected players is 11 of the 33 who have been traveling with the team, and then two coaches, sources tell ESPN. The Marlins, Orioles, and Yankees, Phillies games tonight have been postponed for now. The rest may be played, which is probably a good sign. But, you know, as we start to wrap, it also tells you that if we have a college football season, assuming the game days are on Saturday, Sunday and Monday, we're going to be holding our breath.
Oh, yeah.
Every single week.
It's going to be weird. And that's what I've been telling people all along. If they play a season, it's going to be weird. Just be ready for that. Be prepared for it to be unlike anything you've ever seen before, because you're just going to have to stitch it together patchwork, and that's all you can do.
Well, the next time that I'm with you, I'll take you for some chicken tenders, no slaw, double fries, because I'm with
that's
you.
Right.
I'm with you on the mayonnaise thing, man. If it's got mayonnaise in it, I'm out.
That's right. That's right. No slaw. If people like podcasts, I guess that is a new podcast that is covering Florida State, and that is the greatest podcast name I have ever heard of.
It is absolutely
fantastic.
It's fantastic. I saw it this morning because I saw where you'd said that about mayonnaise, and I was like, amen. And then I saw that, and I was like, that is brilliant.
Yeah. They're making T-shirts. I'm going to see if I can snag one.
Yeah. I suspect you can get one if you want one. Hey, Andy, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Great catching up with you. And, man, I certainly hope, as you do, that we're talking some football at some point in the fall.
Thank you, Neil.
Talk to you soon. Bye. Again, our thanks to Andy Staples of The Athletic for his time today on the Oxford Exxon podcast. We'll be back later today with a live show on our YouTube stream. We'll make that show available to you, I don't know, late Monday, early Tuesday, as the MPW Digital family of podcast rolls on into another week. Stay safe out there and talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.